Well, let's for a little while tonight turn back to the book of Proverbs and chapter 14. And we're going to think tonight about verses 26 and 27. So the two verses that closed the part of the chapter that we read together. Last week we were in Proverbs chapter 11. We reminded ourselves that Proverbs generally are just two line statements with one statement followed by another statement, and the second statement very often clarifies the first statement, or it takes us on from the first statement, or sometimes it gives us the opposite of the first statement. That's how Proverbs tend to work. But other times, two verses are put together. Some proverbs are actually four-line proverbs. That's why it's always good for you not just to look at one verse, but the verse before it or the verse after it. Sometimes the point that's being made stretches over four lines. And I suggest to you that verses 26 and 27 go together because they're both describing something. They're both making a point about something. And that what they're talking about is the fear of the Lord. So let's listen to those two verses again. In the fear of the Lord, there is strong confidence, and his children will have a place of refuge. The fear of the Lord is a fountain of life. It turns one away from the snares of death. So four lines about the fear of the Lord. And we're going to look at those four lines this evening, and we're going to try and pick out what each of them is saying to us and see perhaps how the whole of the four lines go together. So the first line tells us this: in the fear of the Lord, there is strong confidence. Now, when you think about that, that's quite a paradox, isn't it? As we read that, we think, well, surely that can't be true. It's very strange, isn't it, that in the same line you've got the word fear and you've got the word confidence. I don't know what you were like as a child, but some children are very fearful, aren't they? And one of the things that you want to do with a fearful child is to encourage them to be confident, to remind them of certain truths, perhaps, to develop in them certain skills. And one of the things that you want to do is to make them more confident, so that as they go out into the world, they're able to face the world, perhaps more than a fearful child should be. Fear and confidence seem to be two completely opposite things. And so as we look at this verse, and as we look at this first line, we might ask the question, well, how can that be? It's a strong confidence as well, isn't it? It's not just a confidence. It's not just an ordinary sort of confidence. But what the writer of Proverbs, what Solomon is laying before us, is this idea that in the fear of the Lord, there is strong confidence. So if we want to be confident, we need to be fearful. And if we are truly fearful, we will then be confident. Now, how can that be? What does he mean here in this passage? Well, of course, it's good to remind ourselves that the subject of the fear of the Lord is one of the key things that drives the book of Proverbs. And indeed, one of the key things that drives all of the wisdom literature of the Old Testament. So we think about Proverbs, we might think about Psalms, we might think about Ecclesiastes, even perhaps to a lesser extent Job, but those books that are in the middle of our Old Testament, in the middle of our Bible, those books that are poetical by nature, the idea of the fear of the Lord comes out strongly. In some senses, it's the thing that that drives this wisdom literature. So we could go back to Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 7. So the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. We could look at other proverbs here in the book. Proverbs chapter 9 and verse 10 says pretty much the same thing. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. We could look on to Proverbs chapter 15, and there's another. I've lost my the reference now, but throughout the book you find that's where we go. That's what Proverbs is leading us to do, encouraging us to do. It's to fear God. It's the same in Ecclesiastes, isn't it? You know how Ecclesiastes works? Ecclesiastes is Solomon surveying all the different things about life, all the different places where perhaps hope can be found, meaning in life can be found. And he goes in all sorts of places, doesn't he? And he thinks about work, and he thinks about riches, and he thinks about friends. And he goes through all money, he goes through all of these different things. And when he gets to the end of Ecclesiastes, he says, now what's the sum of this? What's the conclusion I draw? You know, time and time again, as he goes through Ecclesiastes, he comes back and he says, no, this is vanity. Vanity of vanity, says the preacher. There's no real meaning in those things. I'm looking for something deeper. And when he gets to the end of Ecclesiastes, he says this, doesn't he? Let's hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every word into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. There's a verse for today, isn't it? God will bring every secret thing visible. We've seen it played out on our television screens with people in power in our land. And secret things that they thought were secret are coming out again. Well, how much more what we do in front of God? And at the end he says, you know, this is the sum of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments. So all through this literature, we're being encouraged to fear God. Now, what does that mean? Does it mean a craven fear? Does it mean a fear that paralyzes us? Does it mean a fear that stops us living our lives? Does it mean a fear that stresses us out? And no, it doesn't mean those things, does it? It's not the fear of a tyrant, is it? It's not the fear of somebody who will abuse us. It's not the fear of somebody who is cruel to us. No, it's the fear of God. It's the fear of a God who we know loves us. It's a respect. It's a deep-seated desire to live our lives in a way that pleases him. That's what it means. It's in the Psalms as well. We sang a version of Psalm 34 earlier on in the service, didn't we? So all the changing scenes of life, in trouble and in joy. The praises of my God shall still my heart and tongue employ. And then he goes on. And then, remember the last verse? Fear him, ye saints, and you will then have nothing else to fear. You see, that's what the scripture reminds us. That if we live our lives before God, and if we live our lives in the fear of God, if we live our lives acknowledging that our utmost desire and our utmost need is to please him and to walk in his ways. Teach me thy way, O Lord. Teach me thy way. If we live our lives to please him and in the fear of him, that's true wisdom. And if we live our lives fearing him, we needn't fear anything else. Fear him, ye saints, and you will then have nothing else to fear. And so you can see how it works. You can see what the writer is saying here. In the fear of the Lord, there is strong confidence. How can you live your life? How should you live your life? You should live your life with the fear of God uppermost. And if you fear God, you don't need to fear anybody else. Ultimately, what anybody else thinks, what anybody else does, doesn't matter. What you need to do is you need to fear God. And if we fear God, we will keep his commandments. If we fear God, we will walk in his ways. And if we fear God, that will make us confident. Think about Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego. We read that story, don't we, in Daniel chapter 3, is it? Chapter 3. And you remember how the command comes to them that Nebuchadnezzar has built his big idol, his big monument to himself. He's told the people from every nation that are part of his empire that when they hear the sound of the music, they have to prostrate themselves before this great thing that he's set up on the plain of Dura. And if anybody else doesn't do that, if people don't do that, well, they will be cast into the midst of the fiery furnace. And the day comes, doesn't it? And the trumpet sounds and all of the other musical instruments. Remember how the chapter describes this multiplicity of instruments and everybody in the whole of creation, it seems, in the whole of the empire, they bow down. But there are these three men who won't do it. And you say, well, how can you do that? Well, are you not scared? Are you not frightened? You've heard the threats. You've heard the punishments. You've heard what will happen to you if you don't do it. But there they stand, don't they? And they're saying they're not going to do it. And you remember how, well, there's always somebody who's there to tell a tale on them, out there, the enemies. And so Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego are brought before the king. And the king tells them again, is it true? Have you really refused to bow down? I'm going to give you another chance. If you, when you hear the sound of the music, if you bow down, it'll all be well. But if you don't bow down, well, you're going to end up in the fiery furnace. And you remember how Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, how they answer, how they say, well, you know, if that's what happens, that's what happens. We're not going to bow down. This is a false god. We're not prepared to do that. And listen to their words themselves. O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. And he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up. Now, why are they able to do that? Why do they stand so fearlessly? Well, they stand fearlessly because they fear God. You think about Elijah as he stands before King Ahab in 1 Kings 17 and 18 and 19. How does he do that? Well, he does it because his confidence comes from God. He fears God, so he doesn't fear the king. Well, think about Peter and John. In the New Testament, they're a bit like Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego, aren't they? They're commanded not to proclaim the name of Jesus. And they say, well, you might give us that rule, but it doesn't matter. We are going to preach Jesus because in him there is salvation. There is no name given amongst men under heaven whereby we can be saved. How are they able to do that fearlessly? Well, because they have confidence, because they're fearing God. And you see, that's a great message to us, isn't it? Do I fear God? Now, maybe before you became a Christian, you feared God. You feared judgment. You feared punishment. You feared the wrath of God. Maybe that was one of the reasons you became a Christian. But now you are a Christian, do you still fear God? Do you still have that driving desire in your heart every day to please him? The last thing that you want to do is to do things that are wrong in his sight, and you fear him. If that's how it is with you, you can walk through life confidently. And that's what the proverb is reminding us of here, that in the fear of the Lord there is strong confidence. And then the beginning of verse 27 tells us a second thing, doesn't it? The fear of the Lord is a fountain of life. It's a fountain of life. Now, again, we might think, well, again, there's a bit of a paradox there, isn't it? You know, fear is something that drives us down. Fear is something that depresses us, perhaps, that could affect our health and could, you know, all of those things. But actually, here's the picture. The picture that the fear of the Lord is the fountain of life. If I'm living my life to please God, to keep his commandments, to be godly, as we said this morning, it's a fountain of life. It's a great picture, isn't it? The picture of a fountain. So this isn't a dripping tap. This is a fountain. This isn't just a small quantity of water, still and stagnant. No, this is a picture of living water, isn't it? When you see a fountain, what do you see? Well, you see a lot of water. If you get too close to the fountain, well, you may end up with a spray upon you. But there's lots of water. There's copious amounts of water. And it's a moving picture, isn't it? There's something that has energy to it. It's not just a lot of water, but there's a power and there's a flow to it. That's the picture that's here. And it goes on, doesn't it? It isn't just something that is poured out once, but the fountain continues, doesn't it? And that's the picture that Solomon uses here in this proverb, that the fear of the Lord is a fountain of life. So if we want to have life, if we want to have energy, as it were, if we want the living water, well, the fear of the Lord is where we start. It's the source, as it were, of life to us. We recognise that, don't we? Of course, it's a picture that's picked up by Jesus, isn't it? We read from John chapter 4, didn't we? And the picture of a fountain of living water is found there, isn't it? So we know that story so well, don't we? Here is this woman. She comes to the well at midday. It's Jacob's well. It's the well with the religious significance, with the history, maybe the rituals that attach to it. Maybe there was some idea that Jacob's well was a better well than anywhere else. You know, maybe people had this thought about Jacob's well, that if they went there, there would be something special in it. That's human nature, isn't it? That's why we see people making their pilgrimages, don't we? To Knock in Ireland, perhaps, or to Mecca, if you're a Muslim. You know, sometimes places have these attachments. Maybe that's why this woman was there. She'd gone there because it was Jacob's well. And Jesus is there. And Jesus strikes up the conversation, doesn't he? He begins to ask her questions. He doesn't need to ask her questions because he knows the answers already. He knows more about this woman than she ever realized. In fact, he probably knows more about this woman than she knew about herself. He knew the background. He knew the relationship after relationship that she'd been through, how she'd had these succession of husbands, and none of these marriages had worked out for whatever reason. We don't know. We shouldn't suggest that it was all down to her immorality. If that was the case, she'd have probably been stoned years ago. But maybe they just not worked out, and perhaps this man had left her, and that man had left her, and then a third man, and a fourth man, and a fifth man, and now she's with another man, and this man is not her husband. Jesus knows that as well, and so there's something not quite right about this relationship. And Jesus knows these things. Jesus begins to talk to her, asks her to get some water out of the well, and she says, "Well, you know, it's strange that you're asking me. You're a Jew. I'm a Samaritan. You know, why are you asking me?" Jesus turns to her, doesn't he? And he says, "You know, if you knew, if only you knew, if you knew the gift of God, if you knew who it was who says to you, 'Give me a drink,' you'd ask him. It wouldn't be me asking you. You'd be asking me if you only knew who I was." The woman says, "Well, hang on a minute. The well is deep. I'm the one with the bucket. You haven't got a bucket. How are you going to give me living water? How are you going to give me water at all? Jesus and says, are you greater than Jacob? You see, Jacob's in her mind. I think that's why she's at that well. Lots of wells around that she could have gone to in Samaria, but she's there. Are you greater than Jacob, the one who gave us the well, the one who drank from the water? Jesus says, never mind that. Listen, he says, whoever drinks of this water will thirst again. Whoever drinks of the water that I shall give him will never thirst. But the water that I shall give him will become in him a fountain of water springing up into eternal life. It's the same picture, isn't it? Picture of a fountain of water. You see, Proverbs is written about 1,000 years before Jesus comes. And as we've said lots of times, as right and as God breathed, as the Old Testament is, we recognize that there are things that become clearer in the New Testament. And one of them is this. See, it's Christ we need to come to. He's the fountain of living water. In John chapter 7, Jesus says something very similar, doesn't he? When they've all come up to Jerusalem for the feast, John chapter 7, verse 37. On that last day, that great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried out, saying, if anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink. He who believes in me, as the scripture has said, out of his heart will flow rivers of living water. Not the same picture, but the same idea, isn't it? A river of living water, just like a fountain of living water. And so you see, ultimately, the fear of the Lord needs to lead us to Christ. The fear of the Lord, if we fear the Lord, well, the fountain of life that we'll find in Jesus. But then there's a third thing that these verses tell us. We're not taking the lines in order, as you can see. We took the first line of verse 26, and then we take the first line of verse 27. And then the second line of verse 27 says this, to turn one away from the snares of death. The fear of the Lord is a fountain of life. To turn one away from the snares of death. You see, Solomon lived in a world where there were snares of death. Some things don't change, do they? We live in a world where there are snares of death. You see, there is the fountain of life. And we who live this side of the life of Christ say that's Jesus. But as well as the water and the fountain of life, there are the snares of death. Proverbs is an interesting book, and it's a book really that's in two parts. So most of the time when we think of Proverbs, we think of the bit that we're in at the moment, which is a collection of these four line sayings, these snappy sound bites about spiritual life. We live in a sound bite age, don't we? You know, the days when politicians would make a 30, 40, 50-minute speech in the town hall at an election time. Well, they're gone now, aren't they? What's important is that somebody can sum it up in a soundbite in a moment. Proverbs is a book of spiritual soundbites, isn't it? And some of them Solomon devised himself. Others of them he collects. So when we get to the end of Proverbs, we have the collections that he's drawn from other people. So Proverbs chapter 30 is the wisdom of Agur and his utterances. We don't know who he was, but Solomon obviously knew he was, and he brings his wisdom sayings in, and that's how Proverbs works. But the first few chapters of Proverbs are not like that. The first few chapters, sort of fatherly wisdom, a father speaking to his son, warning him of all the things that could lead him astray, and thinking particularly about the woman who could lead him astray, the woman who is immoral, and so on. But there are other things as well, you could read through it. The first seven, eight chapters are about that and how to seek wisdom. See, we live in a world that will snare us, and the snares of the world will lead us to death. And it's always been the case, hasn't it? We have fallen sinful natures because we're children of Adam. And because we have fallen sinful natures, there'll be an attraction in us towards sinful things. And that's our experience, isn't it? And even when we're Christians, temptation comes to us, doesn't it? And it could be a temptation to this, or a temptation to that, or a temptation to the other. But actually, it's a snare of death. It leads us away from the fountain of living water. And if we just follow that path, we end up in the snares of death. It's very picturesque language, isn't it? The snare of death. We know what a snare is. A snare is very often something that's hidden, isn't it? A snare is a trap. Something that we don't willingly go into. Something that sometimes just catches us unawares. Something that we fall into, and we had no intention of falling into it. But before we know where we are, we've been snared, we've been captured, and we're stuck. And in Solomon's day, there were the snares of death. Solomon himself fell into it, didn't he? It's good to think that Proverbs was collected perhaps after lots of those things. Ecclesiastes was written after lots of things, but Solomon's heart was like that, wasn't it? How easily he was led astray. We read the story, don't we? How he made those military alliances with the nations around him. To cement those alliances, he married the princess, perhaps. And so he ends up with all of these wives and all of these concubines. And that's a big problem for a start, isn't it? Because that's not God's way. God's way is one man and one woman become one flesh until one dies. And Solomon's not doing that. But there's a bigger problem, isn't there? So he marries these women from these foreign nations and they bring their gods with them. And those gods are a snare. And they're a snare not just to Solomon and to the royal court, but they're a snare to the land, aren't they? And even if we don't see all of it in Solomon's reign, before long, we have all sorts of kings, don't we? We have Ahab, we've already mentioned him, and Jezebel. Jezebel has brought with her Baal, and Baal's entrenched in the land of Israel, isn't he? What's gone on? It's a snare of death. And even as we live our Christian lives today, there are the snares of death, aren't there? Whether it's immorality, whether it's materialism, whether it's the philosophies of this world, whether it's pride, whatever it might be, they're the snares of death. How do we avoid the snares of death? Well, verse 27 says, we stick close to the fountain of life. The fear of the Lord is a fountain of life. To turn one away from the snares of death. That's what we have to do, don't we? We have to turn away. We have to turn around. We have to keep our eyes fixed upon Christ. We have to fix our eyes upon him. And if our eyes are fixed upon him, then the snares of death won't entice us and won't attract us. No, my friends, here it is. The fear of the Lord is a fountain of life. To turn one away from the snares of death. And then there's a fourth line that we haven't noticed yet. I mean, the second line of verse 26. His children will have a place of refuge. See, there's a lovely picture, isn't it? In the fear of the Lord, there is strong confidence. And his children will have a place of refuge. Isn't that a lovely picture? A place of refuge. A place of safety. A place where we can hide, if you like. A place where we're safe. We all have those experiences in life, don't we? And some of us have those experiences to a greater degree than others. But we're very often encouraged when we go through really difficult times. Go to your place of safety. Go to a safe place. And that might be a safe place in our minds, It might even be a safe place physically. Spiritually, we need a safe place. Don't we? We need a place of safety. And when we go through trials, and when we go through difficulties, and when we go through sadnesses, and when we go through doubts and fears, we sang about it just now, didn't we? When doubts and fears arise, teach me thy way. When storms o'erspread the skies, teach me thy way. Shine through the cloud and rain, through sorrow, toil and pain, make thou my pathway plain, teach me thy way. You see, there's none of this false teaching in Proverbs. You know, there are people in pulpits who'll tell you, you come to Jesus and everything will be wonderful from then on. You'll be healthy, you'll be wealthy. All you've got to do is name it and claim it. And we have this preached, and that's not the biblical Christianity that the Bible teaches. Every Christian goes through tough times, through cloud and rain and stormy skies and toil and pain. Where do we go in those times? Well, we need the place of safety, don't we? We need the refuge. And the refuge is in the fountain of life, isn't it? The refuge is in the fear of the Lord. In the fear of the Lord, there is strong confidence. His children will have a place of refuge. You see what the writer of the Proverbs is saying is that if we're not one of his children, we don't have a refuge. We don't have a refuge place. We don't have a hiding place. We don't have somewhere to go. It's a problem with the people that we meet, isn't it, around and about us. And they go through life and the same things are thrown at them as are thrown to us, but they've got nowhere to go because they don't fear the Lord. And they may go to drink, or they may go to drugs, or they may go to pleasures of the flesh, or whatever it might be, food, or whatever it might be. They're not the answer. The answer is to come to the Lord. The answer is found in God. And it was true 3,000 years ago. It's still true today. And so these proverbs stand, don't they? In the fear of the Lord, there is strong confidence. And his children will have a place of refuge. The fear of the Lord is a fountain of life to turn